Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. My guest this week is a long time anime fan, writer, cartoonist, convention personality. You can find his stuff at MrKitty.org. It's Dave Merrill. Hey, Dave, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Glad to be here. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the ships at sea.
So I would imagine, like, so I've known your name for a very long time, and you've been around anime fandom for a very long time, but I'm gonna without you know, no disrespect intended, I would imagine a lot of our listeners maybe don't know who you are. So I sort of want to start there. Like, how'd you get into anime fandom, and when would you say your name started circulating?
Well, when I was two,
okay,
that's two. I saw a television show called Prince Planet. And that just stuck with me for whatever reason. And then when I grew up, I was a 70s kid, so I got to see Speed Racer, and I got to see Battle of the Planets, and I got to see a show called Star Blazers when I was in elementary school. And that show, to me, Star Blazers was like, oh my God, I have to find out more about this show. And when I was in my early teens, my brother and I started going to comic book conventions, the local Atlanta area comic book conventions. And I found a flyer for an organization called the Earth Defense Command, which was an anime club run out of Texas by a guy named Derek Wakefield. And I saw that, and I instantly knew this is exactly the organization I want to be a part of, because it is Star Blazers, and I'm all about that. So I joined that in 1984, I want to say. And in like 15 minutes, I was running a chapter of that organization, because there were so few people involved in my area. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. And at the same time, I was any sort of fan gathering in the city I was going to, trying to find other people who liked Japanese cartoons as much as I did, which surprisingly, there were some people who were shared my obsession.
And that was sort of these years that you're getting involved in this stuff is sort of concurrent with like the Carl Masek years.
Robotech aired 1985
right
on television, and I got a part-time job the minute I could, and I bought a television and a VCR so that I could record Star Blazers the next time it aired, because I'm going to get this show. And so Robotech came out, and I'm like, oh, this is this. We had seen the Macross videotape that Harmony Gold released before they had the Robotech license. So we're like, oh, this is that thing. So, yeah, Robotech was like, oh, my God, yeah, we have to watch this. And that just brought so many people into fandom, Robotech did. And later, you know, it was a similar situation with Sailor Moon. But Robotech got so many people into Japanese cartoon fandom.
Right. And
just exploded.
Yeah, and those years are definitely like the birth of anime fandom in the U.S. Like that's when it started. It didn't really exist before then, you know, with Star Wars.
Well, it did. Because I see by the Skype thing, you're in Fullerton, right?
Yeah, I know. I know the whole history of this area. It's ironic that I wound up living here, yeah.
So you know, there was a chapter of the Cartoon Fantasy organization in Fullerton.
That Masek himself was part of, yeah.
Yeah. So I was actually when I found out there was such a thing as the CFO, I joined that too.
Right.
And I wound up being the national secretary of the CFO in the last 24 to 48 hours of its existence as a national organization.
Oh, okay.
And then that went the way of the dodo, which is fine. There doesn't need to be a national club for, you know, anime. It does not need that.
Yeah. You know. Well, those are different times, you know, when I guess, you know, people felt like they were alone in their fandom for this. So
they did.
You know, they had to create this network of people helping each other out. I would imagine there was a lot of, like, tape swapping going on and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But what, tell us about the fans back then. Like, what were they like? Because in my head, what I'm picturing is a bunch of swarthy 80s nerds, you know, and 90% dudes, 95% dudes.
Yep.
You know, by importing Laserdiscs. This is sort of
It was older. It was a lot more male. It was mostly people that had come out of comic book fandom and Star Trek fandom and science fiction convention fandom, and it was actually kind of a struggle to get everybody together and say, you know, we should have our own fandom for these Japanese cartoons. There was some pushback from the old guard. So we'd get together, and this is something that happened across the countries. People would get together once a month in a library meeting room or an apartment complex meeting room, and you'd bring 15 VCRs, and they'd all get daisy chained up, and you'd make copies of whatever people had gotten in new that month. You know, Vampire Hunter D or Crusher Joe or Dirty Pair television episodes or Orgas or Cat's Eye or all this stuff. You know. And we just copy all day long. And we're very sorry for pirating all this, Japan. It was completely illegal, and we're very sorry. However, there wasn't any other way to get this stuff. This is before the internet existed.
Well, I would imagine back then, you know, anything new would be, you know, the most sought-after thing. But were there, were there titles that, like, were sort of seminal, like everybody always wanted copies of X, Y, and Z?
Everybody wanted a copy of Project Aiko. I think I copied Project Aiko at least 100 times.
Right.
Akira was ridiculously, like, we have to have Akira the minute it came out in Japan. In fact, I know a guy who telephoned, the guy lived in Baltimore. He telephoned a complete stranger in Tokyo and somehow convinced this complete stranger to purchase the video cassette and mail it to him in Baltimore.
He just cold called.
Just so he could have Akira. Yeah, cold call. This guy, I hope he's in sales because he must be a genius. So he had Akira before anybody else.
That sounds completely unbelievable, but okay.
He did it just to piss off the guys running the anime room at the local convention.
There's always something like that. But fandom back then...
Pure spite.
Fandom back then... would you say it's totally totally unrecognizable compared to fandom now?
I don't think it's unrecognizable. I think people would there's always going to be fandom in the sense of I really like this thing and I really there. You know, people are still doing fan art instead of arguments would take place over a course of months rather than days,
right?
Because you had to do everything through the mail and apps and everything. But people are the same. People don't change. You know, the technology changes, but people don't change.
Well, it's just dramatically younger and, at least half women at this point, which is...
It's true. It's much more female now.
Yeah, demographically, it's completely different, which is a good thing. That's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. I do talk to a lot of people from the old days who have an idea that, those were the good old days and, gosh, I wish we could have that wonderful days back again. It's like, no. It was terrible. It was terrible. Mailing VHS tapes is a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
I don't ever want to do that again.
I was doing a lot of that myself in the late 90s. And, it didn't go away until digital fan subs came along and continued.
Continued
to gut the industry. So your involvement in these basically tape trading clubs. When did that change? When did you get more involved in the convention side of things?
I had joined the EDC, which was the Dallas-based club, and the people who ran the EDC are the same people who started Project Akon.
Okay.
So when they got Akon cranking up in 1990, we were in on that. We're like, oh, we're going to go to Dallas for that. Mm-hmm. So we wound up, having a road trip out to Dallas, which is, that's a good solid 13 hours in the car.
Uh-huh.
And went to the first Akon, and it was a big, 300, 400 people. It was a big success as far as we were concerned. We're like, oh my God, we got 400 people. This is amazing, mm-hmm. And it took us a while. We had an anime club in Atlanta called Anime X, and we were sort of putting things together And it took us until 1994 before we finally said, you know what, we could do this. We could do this ourselves. And in 1995, we held the first Anime Week in Atlanta.
Right. And that is the convention that you are still part of to this day.
I'm still part of Anime Week in Atlanta. I was president of our chairman or whatever you want to call it of that show until 2004. And then I moved up here to Toronto. And obviously I can't, be president and not be physically, you know, at a meeting every once in a while. So I've passed it on. I'm now president emeritus, chairman emeritus, which means doesn't mean a whole lot practically, but you know, I get people don't recognize me anymore at the show. It's really I am enjoying it a lot actually. And I want to say actually, me leaving the show has been a tremendous asset to Anime Week in Atlanta because they've been able to go and do amazing things that I would not have ever thought of doing. That maybe I don't know if we should do that. Dave might not like it. And now they're like, who is Dave? Let's just do it, you know, which is the attitude they should have. Because a show that was only a Dave show would be really boring. No one would come to it. You know, right. You have to please much more than yourself.
Everybody would be like, you know, I get it, Star Blazers. You know, there's other stuff.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's only, yeah, exactly, right? There's only so many times you can see that, you know. Well, you know, you have it's a convention. It's not for one person. I've always believed Japanese animation is a mass medium. It has appeal to every person everywhere. It's not some secret thing for the secret people. Well, it's for everybody.
Come on. That's crazy talk.
It is. It's corporate mass entertainment for the masses, you know.
It sure is. So you started Anime Weekend Atlanta in 95. The 90s yes. were sort of when anime, I think you can point to the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s as three very distinct eras in the maturation and production of this particular medium. And mid 90s, you know, 95-ish, 96, you're talking, this is like right when Evangelion's coming out, some Slayers, you got some Escaflowne in there, you know, these shows that are considered classics now. Fandom in that era, was that when you started seeing this sort of generational shift away from the swarthy 80s guys with their Laserdisc players to maybe a younger crowd?
Very much so. Certainly with Sailor Moon getting on. And, you know, honestly, it's a Sailor Moon thing because that's a really popular show. Right. But anytime you got an anime show on broadcast television that had wide appeal, suddenly you got an influx of, what is this amazing anime thing? Where can I find out more about it? And Pokemon has been such, I mean, it's obviously this pop culture juggernaut.
Right.
And that has its own energy, its own whirlwind of. I mean, that's when Time Magazine wanted to write about, you know, anime. What is this great new anime thing? Like Pokemon, they put on the cover.
Right. That was around like.
That was 1999, I think.
Yeah, that would have been the summer of the Pokemon, the first movie, and the Princess Mononoke release, that Mirror Match.
Yeah.
Or as the trailer said,
that was a big
Mononoke.
Deal too.
So all throughout the 90s, you're at the center of this convention, it sounds like. Like this thing sort of swirls around
yes.
you. And when did you said moving to Toronto changed all of that, but how long through the bubble, which we refer to the early 2000s as the bubble, were you part of that, were you sort of at the center of that convention?
That's a good, well, you know, I was like, you know, I delegated an enormous amount of authority at the show. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of the public face of the show. I'd have to stand up during the opening ceremonies and throw candy and introduce people and stuff. Right. But in terms of, you know, I wasn't the guy handling the dealers, thank God. I wasn't having to wrangle. I was wrangling maybe a quarter of the guests, which isn't bad. I was handling most of the events, which, you know, okay, this has to go here, this has to go there. In terms of seeing the bubble, I think right you can point right when Geneon went out of business, I think. Mm-hmm. That's right when it popped. So anything up until that point. And that was concurrent with, you know, 9/11 was there was an economic downturn as a result of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And that happened 2 weeks after our show, or 2 weeks before our show that year, because our show's in September.
God.
Had that happened, had they decided to wait a week before, you know, hijacking those planes, I don't think we would have had an AWA that year.
You know, yeah,
which would have been the most horrible tragedy ever. Let me bring it into perspective here, you know. But it's that really had kind of like people like, whoa, what is going on here? You know, people, everybody had to grow up a little, I think. Everybody that was an adult, I was like, nope, this is honestly really disturbing, you know.
Right. But that aside, but I mean, even like through the bubble, you must have at least noticed like, hey, people are spending a lot more money. Like these companies spending a lot more money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You would see, and I think everybody that's running anime convention sees this all the time. You see a lot of people on sort of the sidelines coming in saying, I've got this great deal for you guys, or here's my plan for this exciting new, I'm going to make this movie. There's at least 15 people shooting documentaries on anime fandom that want all access to every end of your organization. I mean, you know, you mentioned, actually you didn't, but Any Cool Anime News, Scott Green mentioned Otaku Unite. Those guys are, as far as I know, one of the few people to actually produce a documentary about anime fandom in that sort of bubble era.
Yeah.
And, you know, the irony is the bubble is over, and yet anime is still getting bigger.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of us, we've talked about the whole bubble period on this show, like, a lot. And it was more of a market correction than anything else. The market shrank down to the size it probably should have stayed at. And now everybody's figured out how to keep the lights on and keep food on the table, and they don't fuck with it. They're smart about it. Like, you know, say what you will about Sentai Filmworks, you know, Neo ADV, they know how to keep their lights on now. They're not doing dumb shit like, let's start a magazine and a clothing line and a toy business and a television network and blah, 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 blah. It's, we make DVDs. That is
a live action Ava film.
Right, they don't do that shit anymore. So they stay in business. They're actually, you know, keeping their heads above water. And I would say there's growth, but
they got spanked. They got their spanking.
Yeah, but mostly it's just stable now. Like none of these guys are in danger of going out of business.
I'll tell you, it's really enlightening to go back to the 2002. It's enlightening to go back to 2002, 2003, 2004 and read what people were saying. This is the hot new thing. This is where the business is going. This is how amazing everything's going to be.
Yeah. Heat Guy J is going to be huge.
And, you know, yeah. And then you look at you know, 10 years later. I mean, we've got 10 years, you know, hindsight of 2020. And you go, wow, what were they thinking? And in fact, this is, I want to say 2004 AWA. Geneon bought like this full color messed up and thought was the cover. But anyway, there was this, you know, why are you spending all this money on this? There's no way you're ever going to get money back.
Yeah.
You know?
So you were involved in other parts of fandom as well. And tell us a little bit about your non-convention activities as a fan and in fandom, you know, back in the day.
Well, in the 90s, I published three issues of a fanzine called Oxygen Destroyer, which was sort of a general interest anime zine. And when that, I did three issues of that, and it was kind of fun. And then we started Anime X, the anime club, in 1989. And I said, well, you know, we should have a newsletter. We should have a magazine. So I started a zine called Let's Anime. And that went in about 15 minutes from being a club magazine to just being my anime zine. Mm-hmm. And I managed to get 13 issues of that published over 10 years, which is not bad for zines.
Yeah, pretty good.
And, you know, a lot of the writing is really terrible, looking back on it now. And in, let's see, what year is it? In 2008, I said, well, you know, I should start a blog. I should bring all this Let's Anime stuff back as an anime blog. And I've been doing that since 2008, and that's actually been a lot of fun to write. I get to annoy a lot of people. I get to write about whatever the hell I want to write about.
Right.
You know, and basically spew my opinions all over the place. And when I'm not doing that, it's been a while since I've written for Otaku USA, but I have written for Otaku USA, and I enjoy that a lot because it's really cool to go to, say, the grocery store, and there's a magazine on the rack that's got your big Speed Racer article in it, you know.
Right. Yeah. An increasingly rare thing for people these days.
It's the last one. I think Otaku USA is the last man standing.
It is, in fact, yeah. That's it.
And this goes back to what you were saying. They do not spend crazy amounts of money. They're like, nope, we're going to publish this magazine. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, they do an online thing too, but you know, they're not trying to expand it into the wider world of production or anything.
Right. Yeah. 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 Somehow I stay in business. I don't know how.
But yeah, one of the things, actually, this is what I've been working on this week, is Anime North is coming up at the end of the month. So I've been putting together all my panels for Anime North, including Anime Hell, mm-hmm. which is the thing I started doing back. I can't even tell you. I used to do it at Dragon Con. I had the all-night shift in the video room, so I'd just show whatever the hell I wanted to show, mm-hmm. which was parody dubs like Dirty Paradise Dishes, and I would show Prefectural Earth Defense Force back when that was just a fan sub, and, you know, crazy music videos and things like that. And that got expanded and whittled down and chopped and channeled and concentrated into sort of a two-hour... crazy clip show extravaganza.
Right. And you know, most fans at this point have heard of AMV Hell, which is different. That's a different thing, right?
It's completely different. I have right. nothing to do with that.
Yeah, but Anime Hell is your thing, and that shows up at plenty of shows, actually.
Well, I do it at AWA and Anime North, mm-hmm. and Mike Toole does it at Anime Boston, and Ryan Gavigan has been doing it at Anime Central, and it's Sugoi Con and at Ohio Con. And I actually started Anime Hell at Central and at Sugoi Con, but I can't go to all these shows anymore, you know? It's like you grow up, you get a job, you got a mortgage, you're like, I can't spend all my time going off. I want to say Dan O'Baker does, he's not doing one at Acon this year, but he is going to do one at Anime Fest in Dallas.
Right, so people in the Midwest and on the Eastern Seaboard have plenty of opportunities to check this out.
And there's one at Animazement, too, I want to point out. And they're all different.
Right.
None of them are the same. We don't have, like, the home office doesn't send out this month's tape, you know? They're all completely different. I take no responsibility for anything that happens in Dallas or Boston.
Right.
I want to make that clear.
But that became a little bit of a phenomenon. And I would venture to say that, like, it probably changed just the idea, the very concept of it, maybe changed the culture of, like, you know, anime music video screenings and what people expected to see in a panel. I know Mike does, like, dubs that time forgot and, you know, panels where it's...
That was my idea.
Yeah, mostly clip shows of funny stuff that get the crowd all whipped up. That's a really popular thing now. I'd venture to say, like, a third of any given convention's panel program is going to be something like that.
Well, you know, it's always better to show, you know, and not tell, right? Right. If you got a funny clip. And this is actually because I went to Otakon in 1999, and there was a panel called The Worst Anime Ever. And it was, you know, four old white guys sitting behind a table talking about these crazy things they saw once upon a time. Mm. And they didn't have a TV, they didn't have a video monitor, they had no clips. It was just, let's talk about this thing. And I'm, you know, and it was a really good panel, and I'm thinking, A, I'm going to steal this, and B, why aren't they actually showing what they're talking about? Because that would be funny. So I want to say we went back to AWA, and I did Totally Lame Anime, mm-hmm. and I did Dubs Time Forgot, right, which are still continuing. I think Neil Nadelman is doing Totally Lame Anime. He does that at AWA and at Anime North. And that is a ridiculously popular event.
Yeah, all that stuff is really popular. But does that mean we can also blame you for the rise of the your favorite anime sucks kind of panels where it's just a guy gets up on stage and is like, I'm contrarian. Listen to my contrarian opinions for, you know, 50 minutes or whatever. Because those are terrible.
Well, I don't know who would go to a panel like that,
plenty
right?
of people. Surprisingly, a lot of people go to those. They're terrible.
Well, people, you know, it's an outrageous. It's like watching the Morton Downey Jr. show, you know. There's going to be a fight and some guy's going to get a folding chair thrown at him, I guess. I don't know.
To me, it's just some nerd up there, like, arguing with people in the audience. But yeah, I think that probably changed at least panel programming and what people expect to see for convention culture, like, as a whole. I think that's undeniable. So thanks for that, I guess.
Oh, well, you know, anytime. Anytime.
And I kind of wanted to get your take on fandom now and how it's sort of changed over the years. But you occasionally will write about fandom at large. And, you know, you've got an interesting take on it. So I'm curious, like, what kind of trends do you see happening now? And is there anything that puts you off or... like, you know, are there problems that you think need fixing?
Well, I see what's happening right now is fandom, you know, is becoming... I think the rise of things like Comic-Con have really shown the wider world that there are... Fandom exists and that it has a lot of money and it can be influential in terms of getting that money out of the wallets of children and into their pockets. So they're really pitching... I mean, I want to say the success of many feature films is because we got fandom involved in it. And then you have things like Snakes on a Plane where they're trying to generate this fandom that does not exist and will never exist, you know. They're trying to sort of take advantage of it. But what I do see at anime cons is, you know, people sort of they like anime, but they're sort of general fans, you know. I like Doctor Who, I like My Little Pony, I like The Avengers, I like Superman, and I like cartoons, and that's all part of one package. Mm-hmm. You know, and anime cons, I've been saying this for a while, is that an anime con is taking the place of what used to be the Star Trek con. And it used to be every town had a Star Trek con, and if you were any sort of a nerd, you'd just go to the Star Trek con because it was a con, and you went to cons. That's what you did.
Right.
And now it's anime. Because, I mean...
Yeah. Well, I mean, now there's going to be now there's going to be a specialized convention for your thing, like more than likely.
It's true. It's true.
You know, I mean, the anime convention ecostructure as it currently exists, there's more anime conventions than I think any other kind of con, except maybe comic book conventions.
You know, I'm going to say a lot of those anime, those quote unquote anime conventions, they're not. They're just we have to put the word anime in front of it, or people won't come.
Yeah, which is strange. Now they're turning into just generic pop culture conventions, but it's always been known as PockyCon or whatever, so people show up for PockyCon, even though PockyCon is now 10% anime programming and 90% Marvel Comics, Star Wars, Doctor Who, My Little Pony.
Yeah,
Tony,
and that really it bugs me on this sort of obsessive, compulsive, completist, everything's got to be a certain thing level, mm-hmm. right? He's like, well, it's an anime con, you should be doing anime,
right.
You know. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? It's their con. Let them do it. I'm not going to go. I won't be there.
Yeah.
I don't care what happens there. I mean, at the end of the day, they can do whatever they want. It's their con. Have fun with it. Try new things. You know? I mean, go crazy. It's your con. And this is something I've been saying for years, right? Is people were like, I want a con in my town. Why doesn't somebody start a con in my town? It's like, just do it, man. Just, in fact, these days, interest rates will never be lower than they are right now. Borrow some freaking money and go and start your own convention. And even if it fails, at least you can say, well, I did a con once. You have to listen to me now. Yeah. I'm an expert. Listen to me. I ran a con. You
right.
know. I think one thing I'm really seeing from a lot of people is they think anime cons are these amazing revenue generators mm-hmm. that just have tons and tons and tons of money. And that is so not the case. It's like there's an enormous amount of money that comes in right before the show, and then you spend all that money, and it's gone. And then you generate money for the next year. You know, it's not like they're sitting on wads of cash. So if you want to start an anime con thinking you're going to get rich, you are crazy. Don't do it.
Yeah. Unless you're, you know, working for one of these gigantic multimedia organizations that puts on 10 shows, 20 shows a year, and they're branded, and, you know, unless you're Reed.
yeah, unless you're Reed. And Reed does, I believe they do shows that have nothing to do with fandom, right? They're an exhibition company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's an enormous, in fact, this is something my brother was saying. My brother, Jason, runs events for AWA now, so keeping it in the family. And the only people making money out of cons are the hospitality industry, the people that run the hotels, the people that run the convention centers, the caterers. The service industry makes money. The actual convention is, I don't want to say it's a public service, but it might as well be run as a public service because you are not going to get rich doing this stuff.
Yeah, maybe a little profit, but...
Yeah, if you can keep the lights on, you're lucky, you
right?
know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a changing world out there. I'm surprised some of these anime conventions don't just rebrand themselves as, you know, general, like, internet con, you know. And I've said that a few times on the show, and people are like, well, that actually does exist. We have, like, WTF Con or whatever. Or,
there is a show in Hamilton coming up in July called Con Bravo.
Yeah.
And I want to say all of their guests are people that go on the internet to complain about video games or review video games.
Yeah. Sigh.
Personally, I do not see the appeal of watching somebody else talk about video games. I would. That's like the definition of a terrible, terrible party, is where you're sitting on the couch and two guys are playing video games and you're like, Jesus. You know, that's when you leave. But if people like it, people like it. You know, I'm not going to tell people what they can and can't like, you know?
That's the way it's going. Like, just, you know, there's a gathering space where people can sit around and talk about the stuff that they do on the internet, which is kind of strange, but that is kind of the way it seems to be going.
It's interesting. It's very... Well, you know, honestly, the internet has made fandom this giant, throbbing group mind, you know? It's always on. It's always percolating. There's always something happening in fandom as a whole. And the conventions are where this sort of erupts into the normal world, into the real world. And people can, you know, meet each other face to face and drink too much and holler at each other, maybe. And, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. I think one of the things we saw coming out of the boom years was anime turning into this sort of quasi-youth culture movement. My way of thinking was that in the 60s and 70s and to some extent the 80s, if you were 19 and you wanted to go to a big thing with all your friends, it was going to be a rock concert or a festival. It was going to be Woodstock or Altamont or the US Festival, or you're going to go see Kiss, you know, or whatever, you know. And these days, it's the anime con. That's where all the kids go to do a big group kid thing together.
Right. And
I don't know if I'm particularly happy with that, because I would much rather go see a rock and roll band myself. But, you know, I'm old. What do I know?
Well, you know, if you think about it from the teenage standpoint, well, I have one night where I can get into trouble, or I've got an entire weekend where I
exactly.
can get into trouble.
Oh, boy.
And
oh, yeah.
We've got 10 people in this crappy hotel room.
Oh, that's the best. I mean, we were doing that. I was doing conventions since I was 14. Me and my brother and our friends from school, we would get dropped off at the downtown Atlanta Omni, which at that point in time was a really scary place to be. And, hey, kids, have fun. You know, it's like free-range kids, right, you know? And they'd pick us up on Sunday, and we'd be, you know, tired and hungry, and we'd have big bags full of comic books. And, you know, honestly, I remember we were having this discussion on Twitter about the formal ball that they're having at these shows now. And my brother is the defining factor in making formal balls happen, because we tried one at AWA, and it was terrible, and he's like, look, if we're going to do this, we have to do it. Yeah, we have to do it right. And he made it work. And it's just so it like warms the heart to see all these, you know, these are young teenagers, this is 14, 15, 16, 17. This is their first time being in a social environment with people of the opposite sex. Everybody's dressed up nicely. They're going to go and they're going to dance with somebody. And they're all excited and they're really happy that they're allowed to have this happen. That they can have a formal dance in a situation where they're not getting, you know, getting swirlies from the football team, you know?
Yeah, nerd prom, right.
Nerd prom. Nerd prom, got to have it. You know, and this is another thing that makes AWA, it's great that I'm not there, because if you had come to me and said, we have to have a formal nerd ball, I'd be like, are you out of your mind? This is the dumbest thing I ever heard of in my life. It's so popular. So popular. So, you know, my call on that would have been totally wrong. And there was a question about anime music videos and why that's so big at AWA. And the reason is we had guys on staff, Derek Jackson, goes by the name of Jingoro, among others, and who were really, really big into the anime music video scene. And we were, you know, every show would have like, well, we're going to have our contest. You can send us videos, we'll have a contest. And these guys were like, you know what we ought to have is a room dedicated to anime music videos. And all weekend long, we will show anime music videos. The people that make them can come in and have their little period. They can have their set list and show their favorites. why don't we try that? And we did, and it was stupidly popular. Just a tremendously good idea. And that's an idea I would have never had in a million years. All I did was say, sure, why not? You know?
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, the anime music video people that I've talked to over the years, like, the big competition, you know, you want to win Anime Expo. That's, like, the big one. But they always say Anime Week in Atlanta is really where, like, that's where all the real talent shows up. Because that's considered, like, you know, you win that one, that one's really special. Because
I think that it's judged pretty tightly.
Yeah.
They take it really seriously.
Right, which always makes things super fun.
Do you want, should I talk about Cornpone Flicks while we're talking about fan-edited videos?
Well, we got a question about it. So let's get into these Twitter questions here. So we'll get to that. But we got plenty of questions from your admirers on Twitter here. E. Chris Smith asks, Dave, what is the best high school anime based on a light novel?
Yeah, that's Elizabeth Christian. She's yanking my chain here.
I have no clue.
I've never read a light novel. If there's a Japanese cartoon set in a freaking high school, I probably won't watch it.
Wow, that's 95% of everything. You just eliminated it there.
Because you know what? I'm not – those cartoons are made for people in high school, and I'm not in high school.
This is true. Okay. Super Deformed asked, is it okay to not like Italia?
That's the story behind that is he came to AWA a couple of years ago, and we got in the car and we went down to the Kroger down the street to buy stuff, you know, for later on that night. Mm-hmm. And we're leaving the grocery store, and we noticed this guy standing there, like, ears and a tail, looking sad. And he looks at us and goes, are you guys here with a convention? And his friends had ditched him, and he needed a ride back to the con. So he gave him a ride back to the con, and he was this kind of lost, yeah, my friends are all into this stuff that I really don't like. Is it okay to not like Hitalia? We're like, it's okay, man. It's okay. It's all right.
Wow.
It's okay.
That's
actually, my wife really likes Hitalia, and I got to review two sets of Hitalia for Collection DX, and actually, I really enjoyed it. It's kind of goofy. It's not nearly. It's one of those shows that sort of the old guard anime fans are like, look at this stupid Hitalia thing. It's all about gay Nazis. It's like, no. It's not. It's about history, and it's kind of funny, and the guy's done his homework.
Yeah, no, we've had Walter Amos on the show before.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah,
he knows what he's talking about.
Very much wanted to defend it. I believe he was using a clip of our show, like, to introduce his panel where we said, like, no one's learning history from Italia, and the whole panel was like, well, actually, so, you know.
It's true. It's like, I had no clue. And that guy is obsessed.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a good dude.
He's obsessed with obscure European history.
Also from Super Deformed, wants to know who would win in a fight.
Well, Indy Geist or Honey Honey, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think Honey Honey has a magic carpet.
Who the fuck is
at
Honey
one
Honey?
Point. Who the fuck is Honey Honey?
I've heard the name. It's one of those really old
okay,
magical
right.
girls.
Okay, you've
right.
heard of Osamu Tezuka, right?
No, who is that?
You've heard of Osamu Tezuka.
Yeah.
So he lived in the Takanobaba section of Tokyo in a rental house, a rooming house called the Tokiwaso House with Shitaro Ishinomori. I think Go Nagai lived there. Fujio Fujiko lived there. And there was a woman who lived there named Hideko Mizuno, or Mizuno Hideko, however you want to say it. And she was one of the pioneering shoujo manga artists. And she would later go on to do a strip called Fire, which was this sort of seminal shoujo manga about a rock and roll guy in 1970. And it's all, you know, set in the tumult of the early 70s, rock and roll and stuff. But she did a strip called Honey Honey, which was about a girl who... This orphan in Austria in 1910 whose cat accidentally swallows a precious gem, and so she's chased all over Europe by – the gem belongs to Princess Flora of Austria, and she's like, well, whoever finds this gem gets to marry me. So she's chased all over Europe by a crazy German, a crazy Indian, a crazy Arab, and a crazy fat little European prince. And it's a comedy show, so it's a wacky comedy show. And it got dubbed into English and shown on Pat Robertson's CBN back in like 82, 83. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the hell is this? You know, because I thought it was Candy, right? And I'm like, well, I got to watch Candy. It's like, no, this is completely different. And I thought I was going to hate it, and I really like it. It's goofy. It doesn't take itself seriously at all. The dubbing is nuts. And The television show cuts out the manga. She goes to Africa and is incredibly racist.
Oh, okay.
But the television show, because it's from the 60s, right? I mean,
right.
What did they know?
They knew racism. All right, Great SG asks, what does it take to make a long-running and ever-growing con like Anime Week in Atlanta continue to be successful?
Well, the trick is to start small and set a budget and stick with it. Don't get your let your eyes get bigger than your hands. You know, don't reach for more than you can take. I don't want to say have everything under control, but make sure you can handle everything you take on. Don't write, you know, all this sort of good business aphorisms, you know. Don't let your mouth write checks, your ass can't cash, and all that sort of stuff. Because all the successful conventions, and Anime North is like this too, they started out small, they paid all their bills, they made sure they could pay everything that was happening, and they grew incrementally. They didn't start one year and say, we're going to be the biggest convention next year. It's like, no. You're going to start small and work your way up.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to delegate. You find good people to run everything, and you trust those people. You find somebody to run your dealer's room, and you say, you're in charge, go to it. And then you let them be in charge. Don't micromanage, because people hate that. Actually, I would tell, I give this advice to everybody who wants to do a convention. If you haven't, like, thrown a big party in your house, or if you haven't, like, run a family reunion, or go to another con and run a big, get a suite and run a big party out of that suite. If you haven't handled that, you cannot handle a convention.
Kyoto Pro PR Guy asks, what is the oddest thing you've ever seen or been part of while at a convention?
Wow. That's a good question. Let's see. I almost got arrested at AWA, what was that, 8? 7? I think it was 7. That was pretty odd. Yeah, that was nuts. That was right after 9/11, right? So everybody is paranoid and freaky. And I'd been doing Anime Hell on Friday night, and I had somebody had brought down a case of beer into the convention center, which you should not bring alcoholic beverages into a convention center. Mm-hmm. And I had been enjoying myself freely of these alcoholic beverages for, you know, 3 hours while showing crazy clips. And the security guard was in the back of the room watching me the whole time. And I don't know what he was thinking. Who is this insane drunk ranting guy? So I have to pack up all my junk when it's over at midnight and take it all the way back up to my room. And while we're on our way out, one of these bottles of beer drops out of our sweaty hand and smashes on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And that guy is like, swoop, right on us, going, who are you? What are you doing here? It's illegal to have alcohol down here, taking my name and everything. And I'm going, yeah, we're leaving. He made us like pour all the beer out down the drain. It was really funny. And luckily, our hotel rep, our convention center rep, happened to be there and happened to walk past and see the security guard arresting the chairman of the convention. And so she walked over and talked to the guy a little bit. And he's like, just go on. Stay out of trouble. So that was pretty amusing. Yeah, don't get arrested. Don't get arrested, kids.
Six Gun Alchemist asks, with renewed interest in classic or old school anime, is there a series which you feel that, if rebooted or remastered, could be a hit?
I think if they there's a show, this is by the same studio that did Honey Honey. There's a whole series of show called the J9 series, mm-hmm. of Brygar and Baxinger and Sasarigar. And I personally think if they would go back in, and see, these are great shows. They've got good characters, and they're fun, and the animation is terrible. The animation is just lousy. If they would go back in and give Brygar a reboot and make it look nice, I think that would sell. I think that would be an entertaining show. But they are making a new J9 series, actually. The writer has announced they're working on a new project, so that'll be interesting to see. That would have been my... And there's a lot of shows that have never actually gotten a proper DVD release. Like, there's a Tatsunoko show called Starzan S that I don't believe has ever been released on home video in any format whatsoever. And it's a cross between Star Wars and Tarzan. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny. It's a comedy show. And it looks really good. It's a really aesthetically, it's very 80s, right? You know, the lead girl has got these giant leg warmers and everything. It's so 80s. But I think people would like that, you know?
Reed Nelson asks, why do you like anime anyway? What got you into it? Obviously, Star Blazers. Are you still into it, or do you just love old stuff?
I still, I think there was actually, this kind of ties into another question I saw that was, what are some of the newer shows you like? Or do you just watch the old shows, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good, like, why are you obsessed with these cartoons, you know? And I think a big part of it is that the look of Japanese animation ties in really closely with sort of a general pop culture advertising art, sort of mid-century 50s, 60s, 70s corporate logo look that we were brought up as children. It's like, oh, that's Tony the Tiger, or that's, you know, this other crazy cereal mascot, you know. So it kind of there's a crossover in that sort of visual appeal. And when you can see this stuff move on the television, when you can see Speed Racer, you know, hop in a car and zoom around, and there's an effort to really make it look, I don't want to overuse the word cool, but there's an effort to make it look cool. This looks cool, you know. They take their time. They're like, oh, yeah, we want to give it this extra added punch, you know. And you feel bad about it now because all the animators that were doing this in Japan were getting paid like peanuts. They were basically doing this for nothing. Out of the goodness of their hearts, you know.
Right. Okay. Daryl's right. I
did want to point out some of the newer shows I really like. That Lupin the Third, Fujiko Mine, Woman Named Fujiko Mine. Mm-hmm. That was terrific. I really enjoyed that. Of course, Yamato 2199 is outstanding. I'm really enjoying the Unicorn Gundam UC. That's to my mind, it's like the first episode of UC Gundam. It was like Char's counterattack just ended, and then this just started. We're like, finally, here's the Gundam we've been asking for since 1980 freaking 8. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, it was like a blessing. But yeah, there's always something. That's what I like about the anime field. There's still enough money and enough talent in the field to always produce something that is completely unlike anything else that's come out, like Flowers of Evil from a couple of seasons ago, you know? That was disturbing. And that was, you know, you have an image of your mind in your mind of the, like, the typical anime. That is nothing like the typical anime. Or, you know, like Space Dandy, right? I mean, that's really not a lot like anything else on television. Right. Or was, anyway.
No, we'll come back here in a few months.
Yeah.
All right. And so Daryl Serrad, we got a few questions from, asks, what exactly was Corn Pone Flicks anyway, and what effect did they have on shaping anime convention culture as we know it?
Well, that's a good question. Corn Pone Flicks started out as a little filmmaking collective run by two guys, Matt Murray and C.B. Smith, who, by the way, is married to Elizabeth, who asked a question earlier. And they were big Star Blazers fans, and they said what we should do is take Star Blazers and edit it together and dub it so that it's funny. And they called this Star Dip Wads. And they made, when I first met them, they had just completed their first cut of Star Dip Wads. And they were desperately eager to, like, show it to other anime fans because they didn't know any other anime fans. So they joined the local anime club. And we started working on short films together. And we shot The Making of Star Dip Wads. And we shot a Star Dip Wads Christmas, both of which had little live action segments connected with them. We did two parody subtitles that I wrote the script for of two short Toei Super Robot films, Aggrandizer versus Great Mazinger and Mazinger Z versus Devilman, which I think are pretty funny. I'm pretty happy with those. And we've shot a whole gut load of short, like, fake trailers and little short, just sort of indefinable sort of movies. And they're all available at cornponeflix.org. You can go there and find them all. Like, I think everything is online now, more or less. Except for Making of Star Dip Wads. I don't think that's ever going to get released online because it's terrible. We got thrown out of every mall in the metro Atlanta area shooting that thing. And that was with, like, this gigantic honking camcorder. This is 1989 we're talking about, way before you had digital cameras. But Matt did all these special effects, like in-camera special effects. We shot a UFO abduction movie called Men in Black before the Will Smith Men in Black, I might point out. That had all sorts of laser effects, and it was all, like, practical stuff. So it was a lot of fun to shoot. Really a pain to shoot, but a lot of fun. And that has affected con culture in that I had a ready-made source of really insane comedy stuff to show. Every year when we went to A-Con, and this is 90, 91, 92, 93, we showed, like, Star Dip Wads had been shown out in Dallas for a couple of years. So people were like, oh, yeah, Startup Wads. You know, it was a big deal. So we had a new, some sort of a new crazy movie to show at Akon every year for 3 or 4 years running. And we also started doing, the first year, I think it was an ice fight with Pam Buck in the hallway of Akon. And that sort of transmogrified into a water gun fight. And we all bring our water guns and have a big fight in the hotel. And that was like the worst thing you can ever do ever. Don't ever do that. But we were stupid and didn't care. But I honestly think, I mean, we weren't the first guys to do parody dubbing. There had been parody dubs before Stardipwads, and like The Dirty Pair Does Dishes. That was amazingly popular. Like, that got shown every freaking... Everybody's like, I'm going to do a parody dub. But I think we were at least... Cornpone Flicks was one of the early guys showing the parody dubs, really promoting them.
Yeah, and that has probably had a huge impact on that. on convention culture and what people expect to see.
Well, you know, we would people were expecting to see this. People were expecting somebody's going to have a room party and show their crazy parody dub.
Right.
You know, and then Ryan Gavigan does, speaking of video panels, he does a thing called Midnight Madness where he shows parody dubs for 2-3 hours. And that actually, I want to say that's been, it's sort of like a convention just for parody dubs. And he gets new and exciting and funny stuff all the time. That's still a thing. It was like, oh my God, parody dubs are still a thing. But they're much, much, much better now. I don't know that they're funnier, but technically, oh my God, they're much, much better.
They are not funnier.
Well, that's sad to hear.
Now I
want to get Matt Murray to do another Startup Wads just so I can do my Captain Avatar again, because I really enjoy doing that voice.
All right. Greatest G asks, Anime Week in Atlanta is one of the few anime conventions that only does walk-ons instead of skits for cosplay contest. What led to that decision, and do you feel more cosplay contests would benefit from doing that?
I can tell you exactly why that happens. AWA 5, I had been emceeing the costume contest because nobody else wanted to do it. Yeah. And the fifth AWA, I'm out there on stage. There are about 45 different skits. Everybody's changing the order in which they want to go. I'm standing there on stage trying to read these handwritten forms. You know, the people who can barely write are scrawling these Japanese names out that I can't pronounce. And it's my brother is coming out every 5 minutes to tell me, oh, there's been a change. Number 3 is now going to be number 8. You know, it was interminable. It went on forever and ever and ever. The audience was hateful. They were like, who are these stupid people? Why are they boring us with this? This has been going on for 3 solid hours. This is ridiculous. And it was all because people wanted to do, grown men wanted to come out on stage and wave their hands around pretending to shoot magical force beams at each other. Mm-hmm. There was one, and this was the year before that, there was 36 people wanted to do a 12-minute interpretive dance to Fushigi Yugi. Yeah. And we're like, this is not entertainment. This is torture. So after the fifth, actually my brother, AWA 5, my brother won the audience choice award. He was not wearing a costume. That's how much they hated everybody on that stage. So, you know, after AWA 5, I'm like, I am not doing this anymore. I don't care who you do, who you get, what happens. I am not going to be in this room for the costume contest. I'm done. And I never went back. And the decision was made, we are not going to allow skits. These are so not worth anybody's time. And I want to say on three separate occasions, we have attempted to give the people that want to do skits a platform in which to do their skits. And they have done their skits, and nobody wants to see them. And unless you force people in that room at gunpoint to see these dumbass skits, nobody wants to see them. Skits are, I believe they should be eliminated, preferably with gunfire. If people wanted to see amateur theatricals, they would go to the freaking dinner theater.
Couldn't agree more. Most of my least favorite memories of anime conventions involve years when I would actually still go to the masquerade, and I would sit there, and some horrible sketch is going on, and I'm wondering that's the moment where I question what I've decided to do with my life, and.
Exactly,
why,
right?
Why
and you're like,
here?
Why are these people representative of me? Like, because I have nothing in common with these people.
Yeah, well, you're right. It's when you said it's not entertainment, it's torture. Yeah,
it's torture.
It totally is. And it's like a four-hour show of some guy in like a bad Ranma costume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know. Or some guy in foam hair pretending to fire magical force beams from his hands.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, are you eight? No. It would be charming if it was eight-year-olds doing everything, right?
Then it would just be creepy, yeah.
So yeah, don't go. I think people should quit going. For years, and this, I blame myself, right? Because when we started AWA, I'm like, we don't have to do this. Like, we don't have to do all the stuff that sci-fi conventions do. Just because they did it doesn't mean we have to do it. But they had a costume contest. We have to have a costume contest. I didn't want to have any judging of prizes. I wanted, like, you all get a prize. You're all winners, you know? Because who cares? Seriously. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're all special.
Right.
Hooray for you. You all get a gold star, you know?
Okay. We gotta start getting through these a little quicker here. NWIMan87 asks, do you think people grow out of anime fandom more commonly than other fandoms, comics, for example?
No. No, I think comic book fans seem like you have to bury them at the crossroads with a stake through their heart. You have to cut their heads off. Comic books these days are being bought by 45-year-olds, by people my age and older.
Right.
Have you been to a comic book convention lately? Have you seen who's buying comic books? They ain't kids.
Well, the only,
that's why the comic book industry is dying.
The only actual comic, which is no longer a comic book convention, that I have attended in the last 10 years is San Diego, and that's not a representative
exactly,
of comics fandom. So,
boy, you know, you want to see like science fiction fandom, literary science fiction fandom. Those guys are literally like, go to a literary science fiction con. That's, everybody's in walkers or rascal scooters.
Right.
They're all super, super old, you know, right? So I think anime fans are like, you know, it's something you do. You like cartoons. Cartoons are mainly, these things are mainly intended for children. Let's be honest here. These are cartoons. They're to sell toys to children and grown-ups who should know better, but don't. So people are going to grow up and out of it. That's what they should do. It's disposable pop culture. We're not like I'm not saying, you know, I think anime is appeal to everybody, but I don't think everybody in the world is going to be, you know, I'm going to be a super otaku and buy all these. I'm going to buy every issue of anime. Just like, no. It's pop culture. You should take it as much as you like and then move on. And you shouldn't feel bad about it.
Okay, we got a few questions about anime clubs, but I think I'm just going to go with this one that sort of distills a bunch of them down into one. Jeff Tevitz asked, with current streaming technology and social media interactions, do anime clubs have a renaissance left in them?
I have no idea. I haven't been to an anime club meeting in at least 10 years. So I don't know what happens to those things. I suggest meeting at midnight and sacrificing a goat. I think that'll bring anime clubs back. No, honestly, if I had, like, I don't mind having, like, let's all get together and have a social thing, but the idea that we have to have a club that is open to the public, that we meet in some sort of public location and watch cartoons that are available everywhere, I don't see that, really. I mean, I see having, like, we're going to have our film society, and the members can talk about, you know, socialize, right? I see the social aspect of it. But literally, Japanese cartoons are available everywhere. It's not like the 80s in which the anime club was the only place you were going to see Project Aiko. That was it. If you didn't go to the anime club, you were not going to see it. Whereas these days, I don't see what the point is, right? I mean, if you go to college, you join the anime club. It's something to do when you're in college, but I don't see the point of it when you're out of college. I honestly don't.
I think as a social club, they still have some relevance, but that's just people, like-minded people getting together and having a little, like, Saturday afternoon party or something.
Yeah. And it should be, that's how it should be. It's like, I don't want to, like, if you want to have friends over to watch the ball game, you know, you're not going to rent a hall and say, we're going to watch the ball game, everybody. Come on, come on. It's like, no. It's like, okay, Bob and Frank, and you bring Jane, and we'll get together and watch Project Aiko, right? It's a private thing. That is actually how the anime club, there was an anime club in Toronto in the late 80s. This is way before I moved up here. And it was run by two women, and they had one official club meeting of the CFO. They were CFO chapter, and they had a bunch of total strangers in their house watching, you know, pawing through their junk. And they're like, we are never doing this again ever. And I don't blame them a bit, you know. It's like, we shouldn't have to sacrifice for Japanese cartoons.
Shintaku asks, do you guys still enjoy conventions after all these years, or is it something you dread?
I cut way back on convention, so I enjoy them now. I had a couple of years when I was going to way too many conventions, and I started to really, really hate them. And I learned from that, and I said, well, I'm not going to go to 8 shows this year. I'm going to go to 2. And I enjoy them a lot more now that I only go to 2.
Yeah, the last time I went to an anime convention for fun was 15 years ago. So
wow.
Well, I mean, that's how long I've been doing this for a job. Like that's how
true.
Long I've been making my living writing about this stuff and that sort of thing.
Hey, do you go down to Anime Los Angeles?
Yeah, that's local. So I usually run over there and do like a panel or something. But I usually only go for like a few hours.
I enjoyed it. They had me out there a couple of years ago. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a good show. It's increasingly more and more packed. It gets a little claustrophobic down there in that airport Marriott basement or whatever where the thing is held. But I usually show up, say hi to Tim Eldred, and that's about it. But I don't, again, like that. I show up, I do a panel, and then I take off. I guess I sort of do that for fun, but it's just kind of like, hey, this is happening, and it's Sunday, and it's relevant to my work, and I can, you know, parking and gas is a tax write-off, so let's go.
Exactly. It's close enough and convenient enough that you don't have to, you know,
like if
you don't have to disorient yourself to get to it.
But I have to admit, if I suddenly were not working in this line of work anymore, I wouldn't spend vacation money going to an anime convention.
Like, No way. We went to the last, I think, purely pleasure convention we went to was Otakon in 2000 and... You still there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Otakon in 2011. And we happened to be driving from here to Myrtle Beach. So it was kind of on the way.
Right.
Baltimore. Sort of, kind of, you know. Yeah. So we drove down there and got it, you know, paid to get in, wandered around, saw some panels, saw some friends. And it was kind of fun. I don't think I'm going to commit to it every year, but while we were doing it, it was fun.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of... Well, Daryl and Elizabeth both asked about this, and I assume it's some sort of in-joke or something I don't understand, but Daryl's question was about fan convergence and wants to know your thoughts on Klingons at anime conventions in 2014.
Well, you know, back when we started AWA, our slogan was no vampires, no magic, no Klingons. Mm-hmm. Because we were sick of all the Magic the Gathering guys sitting around on the floor getting in the way at every convention we went to. We were sick of the vampire role-playing people, which was a really big deal in the 90s, is live-action role-playing, where you would put on a cape and wander around pretending to be Bela Lugosi, mm-hmm. you know, which is super annoying. And then the Klingons, which are... I assume they're like this everywhere, is you get a bunch of Star Trek fans who want to be Klingons, and they make their Klingon club, and they're like, we're the Klingons, we're going to go to every convention and provide services to every convention because we're Klingons, and that's what we do. And we were just like, dude, we love you, your thing is great, this is an anime con, so it's for anime, so see you later, right? If you want to show up and watch anime, that's great, but not about Klingons, you know? And they were irritated. We actually... One guy got up during the closing ceremonies at one AWA and was like, felt really insulted that we would dare to exclude the Klingons. It's like, well, sorry, buddy. We don't go to your show and insist you watch Astro Boy, right?
I wonder what it's like to not have any real problems.
I know. It's like your life is so empty that this is the number one problem.
But you're in here doing this.
Not being welcomed at the Japanese cartoon convention.
Okay, Todd Sielik asks, he wants to know if there's going to be any more Hazard Von Braun comics, and he also wants to know if you can send him tapes of Prince Planet for free.
I will not send him tapes of Prince Planet for free. Prince Planet is coming out on DVD later this month, by the way. Official DVD release for Prince Planet. You can buy it on Amazon. No, Hazard Von Braun is a strip I did back in 2002. We published... I was a member of a little comic book collective. We published a comic book thing called Juku. And my contribution was Hazard Von Braun, Astronaut Detective, which was this really turgid, over-inked sort of science fiction, hard-boiled detective in outer space kind of story. And I really enjoy doing it, and I do intend to do more Hazard Von Braun stories. And this is something that we do at Mr. Kitty, is we do we make fun of comic books every week with Stupid Comics, which is a popular feature. And my wife and I also do our own original comics. And my wife is doing a strip called Behind the Blue Door. And she does a strip making fun of fans called Georgie Girls, which I really enjoy. And she's done a sort of a yaoi romance strip called Element of Surprise, which has been very popular. And right now I'm continuing to work on this strip called Zero Fighter, which is taking years and years and years. And I think it's going to get finished this year. And then I got some other projects lined up that are going to be pretty exciting. And let me point out, I have word AWA is going to be in September, September 26, 27, 28. And if you have not bought your tickets, buy your tickets now. We've got guests. I cannot announce their names because it has not been officially announced. But I am super freaking excited about the guests we've got this year. And if you're my age, you're going to like these guests. And also we've got, I don't know how you pronounce her name. And she used to be called Mio. And now it's M-I-Q. And I don't know if it's Meek or Miku or just M-I-Q. She sang the theme to Elgheim. And she sang the theme to Dunbine. She's done a lot of anime song work. She still performs anime songs at the Super Robot Spirits concert. She is coming to AWA. And there's going to be an awesome, awesome anime song concert at AWA. So if you want to sing crazy anime songs, AWA is the place to be. Just want to put that out there. It's driving me crazy. I can't tell you the name of this guest. It's driving me absolutely insane.
They're very popular on YouTube for talking over video game footage.
Yeah, they're the best. They go through this game so fast. Why do people watch that? I'm going to watch a speed run of somebody playing a video game.
I don't have like this sort of contempt for it. I enjoy some of that stuff, but you know, the speedrun stuff is just about watching somebody who has a crazy amount of skill at something. It's like somebody doing a skateboard trick. Like, it's not, you know, and the good ones are like 15 minutes long, not like 2 hours or something like that. But the whole talking over video game stuff, I do that, and it's just fun to do. And for some reason, people show up and watch it. I don't know why, but...
Oh, it's like a live stream, though, right?
It's fun for people. Yeah, it's fun for the person doing it. I enjoy doing it.
I think there's more of an appeal when you're looking at something live as opposed to, well, this is a YouTube... This is a question I get with Anime Hell, right? I'll do an Anime Hell, and then people will be, well, this is going to be up on YouTube later, right? It's like, no, what would be the point of that?
Right.
It's a live show, right? You're in the crowd with an audience. It's not something you watch at home by yourself. It's, you know...
Yeah.
It's a communal thing. Yeah. I mean, I think this is why there was a question about video rooms at anime cons, and I think people like watching this stuff with a crowd. People like watching it with like-minded friends.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the relevance of video rooms, I think, has changed. You don't go into a video room now to see something you've never seen. That could be part of it, I guess, if you're just bored at the convention and are like, okay, I've never seen this, I'll pop in. But mostly it's about the thing you can't get at home, which is sitting in a room with 100 other fans in it, watching something that everybody knows and enjoys.
Or it could be, and this is something I'm seeing increasingly, which is a good thing, it's curated. It's a video room programmed by someone that says, this is really good, we should show this. This has meaning above and beyond, it's an anime con, I got to show anime, you know? Mm-hmm. And what we need is more curated experiences in these video rooms where people show, this is an excellent show that you need to see. Not just, well, this is the screener we got today. Here's the latest thing. We don't know if it's good or not. Here it is, you know? I think we're past that point. We need to be a little more discretionary in our programming.
Yeah, the exclusive screening of Naruto Law School is those days are
yeah.
Okay, last question from Dusty Cram Cram. Favorite and least favorite documentaries about nostalgia and fandom?
Wow. My favorite fandom documentary, I think, has got to be Trekkies. I think it's put together the best, I think. I that's the most professional. I like Otaku Unite because I'm in it, right? I think there's like this 15 minutes at the beginning that's all about Kaiju Big Battle, and it kind of throws the piece off, I think.
Yeah.
The bad documentaries I will not watch. There's nothing worse than a bad documentary.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't. To me, like a lot of these documentaries, the ones about anime fans, which nobody makes anymore because it's not.
Now it's bronies, I think.
Now it's the countless documentaries about bronies. I don't generally like them because they're made by fans.
Exactly.
And it's not necessarily from a production standpoint, although certainly a lot of them don't look any good, and they don't know what to do with the camera or how to make a documentary look professional.
You know, it's the editing, I think.
Maybe it's the editing. Regardless, the viewpoint is self-congratulatory to the point of being, I consider it to be propaganda.
Exactly.
I don't like a documentary that has such a strong point of view that I'm just reading somebody's essay about why fans are so great. If I'm going to watch a documentary about fandom, I want to see the dark side too. I want to see the bad side. There has to be something about it in there, because that is a huge part of a lot of fandoms now. And I don't think it's fair or honest to have a documentary that's just, look at these magical young men who just, oh, they love their comic books and their ponies so much, and it's a great thing for everybody. It's like, okay, there's an incredible dark side to comic book fandom, to bronies, to all of this stuff that never shows up in any of these documentaries. And to me, that's not a documentary. That's a piece of propaganda. You're selling
exactly.
Yeah, you're selling me on the concept that these guys are so great and everything they do is so wonderful. Well, you know for a fact a lot of these guys go home and make rape threats towards women who say things they don't like on the internet. And if you don't talk about that, then you're trying to sell me something and I don't like it. So I would love to see an actual even-handed documentary about fandom at some point that mentions both sides.
Covering this sort of thing up for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah, exactly. And so long as that doesn't happen, like even Trekkies, which is a good documentary, it's well put together and it doesn't, it's a love letter, but it doesn't feel like it's just selling me on something. It is kind of look at these weirdos kind of a thing.
It comes from a place of love, but they also understand how people outside are going to see it.
Yeah, and it's made by professionals who know what they're doing, so it's a decent documentary. But yeah, I mean, until there's one out there that's really actually even-handed, I'm not interested in your look at how great we are movie. There's at least like seven of those about bronies at this point.
Well, you know, this is something I feel really kind of responsible for is anime fandom is basically a fandom of people instructing you to sit down and watch television for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And that ain't healthy. Okay. That is so not healthy. I'm at the age right now where I have friends who have died who are my age. This isn't because they watched anime, but, you know, you have to start taking care of yourself. And that starts by not spending your entire life watching television. I've got friends who have had parts of their feet removed from diabetes complications. I have, you know, and again, these are maybe the time you spent watching cartoons. Maybe you could have been walking on the block. Maybe you should lay off the Twinkies. Holy cow, you know, maybe you shouldn't drink so much. I'm just saying.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, this is me saying don't drink so much.
Right.
Seriously.
Well, yeah. Well, your body can't handle it once you start getting older. You're in your 20s. You can do whatever you want. But
well, you know, you can punish the hell out of your body when you're in your 20s. Mm-hmm. And that can have lasting repercussions for the rest of your life.
Right. Sure.
You know.
But on a more positive note, this was a lot of fun talking to you. I'm really glad we were able to have you on. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Dave for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a little rating or review. We would really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.